Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 74 of Little Things for Bonsai People. It is 2024, the year of the wood dragon, and today I am joined by a couple of my show hosts and show editor. So the first one is going to be Carmen Lesko-Bienski as my host. How's it going, Carmen?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Pretty well. We have a lot of things to catch up on here after the past weekend and stuff, and another interesting topic. But before I go further, I need to mention that we also have our editor, Matt O'Donnell. How's it going, Matt O'Donnell?
It is going quite well, thank you.
Great.
You're welcome.
Yep. We have Matt on every once in a while, so you guys might recognize his voice either from a few of the random odd episodes we might have where he just jumps on. But also, if you've listened to his podcast, you might recognize his voice from there, too. So
that's right.
Yep. You should go check it out. Anyway, before we get to that, I wanted to mention that we are talking about the show that I did this past weekend. We're going to recap about that a little bit, talk a little bit about how we went into that. I know we just had an episode previously about Bonsai Central, but hey, I want to tell you guys how that went. And then we're going to go into Trident maples and their care and how to use them for a bonsai. I know, Matt, you had no idea what the topic was going to be, but welcome
That's
to the
fine.
Show.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can ask questions and stuff too as we go through this and just hang out, you know that.
Yep.
Before we get into it, though, I do need to mention that our podcast is sponsored by our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. Head on over there and become a bonsai best bud and hang out with these people in the Discord. We have so many patrons now that I used to read this off like every single name, but now I'm going to simplify it here so it's a little bit easier to listen to. So our new Bonsai Best Bud that we have from this previous week is David Smith. Thank you so much for subscribing at that level. And then we have a new Bonsai friend in Jeffrey Christina. Thank you for subscribing. And I'm going to do a featured Best Bud or featured Bonsai Best Bud or however we want to say it because it's all mixed up. Our featured best bud is Randy Bennett this week. And Randy was at the show and he actually won best classical, design presented by our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. So congratulations, Woo! Randy. And thank you, Joshua Roth, for sponsoring Say Bonsai 2024 and, presenting that, you know, allowing us to present that award in your behalf. That was awesome. So, and then of course we have our specimen best buds that always get a shout out, Unryuin Bonsai Garden in Australia, Christina Cloforia, and holding down the anchor, Bill's Bayou. Thank you, Bill Butler. So that's our top tier members there getting new shirts as they drop. I know we have the long sleeve shirt currently running right now. And that's also something to mention. If you guys want to go over to underhillbonsaistore.com and go check out our merch, we got the under the little things tab on that store there. We have the long sleeve shirt that says I'm into heavy metal. It was sponsored by Joshua Roth Tools to kind of help us get that design together and get it, you know, get it paid for. It was awesome. And so I ran out of the other shirts. So we're basically on that design and we're looking to release a new design in the near future year. But also can't go much further without thanking our editor, Matt O'Donnell. He makes us sound smart. He cleans up our audio, makes us enjoyable to listen to. Go over to mattodonnell.com, fill out a contact form, blah, blah, blah. You know where this is going. Matt, I think you can tell people a little bit more if they want to chat with you about doing any projects. Would you like to say some stuff there?
Yeah, sure.
I feel like there's more to be said.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as everybody knows, I work on this podcast. People seem to enjoy the fact that it sounds good. That's very nice. No, people comment, you know, pretty frequently about being like, oh, this show sounds great. It flows great. You know, that's my fault. So that's good. So like, you know, anybody, there's a bunch of people that listen to this podcast. The numbers on this podcast are quite good.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
might be a reflection.
There are inevitably people out there who are wanting to work on podcasts and I would be interested in helping out with that. I think. So there's that.
Depends on the content.
It depends on the content, depends on the time commitment. You know, there's a whole bunch of things. I mean, I don't have an intake form per se, but if I had one, it would have things like that on it.
Yeah.
And then also, I'm sure you would have mentioned it if you'd kept on rolling that I am next week about to drop episode 7 of my podcast, Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know. Which I find interesting that Evan thinks it's interesting that my show is about like people with like interesting careers and stuff. I mean, I suppose that is true. Like, I'm probably only going to ask, you know, I'm probably not going to ask like a bank guy, though I might ask a bank guy.
You should ask a bank guy. Like, there's things I want to know about.
Yeah, their
that.
Jobs seem dicey.
I mean, like, where's Absolutely. The panic button? Like, have you ever had to push the panic button? Like, you know, important things.
Yeah, so the next episode that's coming up, I don't tell people what the episodes are beforehand.
Oh, I want to know, though. What is it?
Oh, I'll tell you. No. Yes. I just, I was like, yeah, maybe I'll just world premiere it here. I don't know. I'm still figuring this out because, like, I'm no social media whiz or promotion whiz. Like, I'm good at... Yet. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Carmen.
You're welcome.
It's more just a vibe of, like, I'm good at doing the thing, and now I have to figure out how to make it go, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't tell people beforehand. But the next episode of my podcast is with my buddy Tim Buell, who is a great drummer, a great music educator, a all-around good guy. He's also very good at social media in ways that I am not. And so we talk a lot about the modern music scene as business, like how to be in the business of yourself as a modern musician instead of just trying to go out on tour, be on tour, and then, you know, have the gig end where the artist gets pregnant or they want to go in a different direction or something, and then all of a sudden you have no money. So it's about, you know, diversifying and things like that and stuff. I chose to have Tim on because I use a three-digit numbering system for my podcast, and the episode is 007, and Tim is also a gigantic James Bond fan, and I realized the other day that there was no way I could have a 007 episode that's and not good. Have Tim be the guest, so that's why he is the guest.
That's really
sweet.
That's
awesome.
You can find that podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Hopefully everybody out there listens to my episode with Evan, which is honestly one of the better episodes that has happened so far. So it is the episode that I have been directing people who are prospective guests to listen to as a good example of what it's like for something I don't know a ton about to have me ask them about it and laugh about that. So anyway. Yeah.
That's flattering, man. Thank you.
You are most welcome.
Yeah. So no, I know you also had, I think I might have mentioned it on a previous episode or something. You also had like, was it Robbie Klein was on the previous
episode? Robbie was on episode 5.
Oh, okay.
Which was 2 ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I released biweekly, so that makes it a month ago now that Robbie was on. But, you know, not only is Robbie an incredible photographer at, you know, the highest levels, and so having him on was like a big deal, but was also easy to access because he's an incredibly close friend of Amanda and mine. But Robbie has been one of the people who is most like interested in being like, you should have this person on and this person. And I'm like, whoa, I don't know if I could get those people. They're people that he knows. So I figured if Robbie's going to try and talent broker for me, that I should have had him on so that he could be like, here, listen to my episode of this. So
And people, if y'all will go look up Robbie Klein. I mean, fun fact, that dude's like from my hometown. Like,
yeah,
he literally went to high school with me. It's crazy.
That's cool.
But yeah, that was I thought that was kind of awesome. How
did you listen to that episode?
No, I have not. I'm so sorry. I do a lot more podcasting now, like, well, you know, podcasting like every week. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts like as much as I used to. I used to absorb podcasts like every day. Now it's like whenever my favorite Magic the Gathering podcast comes around, I listen to them and then I knock
Nerd.
That out. Hey, look, that was something.
I'm just kidding.
I totally lean into it. It's whatever. I don't even care.
Hey, I asked, Carmen, did you listen to the Evan episode of my podcast?
I haven't gotten around to it yet.
See, no, you didn't. Go. No, you didn't. Both y'all are haters.
No. I'm not a hater.
I'm kidding.
I'm not a hater. I'm also incredibly lazy.
Yeah.
I asked Evan at the end about Magic the Gathering and his relationship with it, and he was almost hesitant to share that. So
yeah,
I'm glad he shared it. When he was here, we definitely went to some card shops, and he bought some cards. And
I was like, there's this one card shop here. Because she's in Portland. She's in, like, the birthplace of Magic the Gathering. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I was not.
Yep, that's, like, where it was born. And I was like, well, you have to go to some of these card shops. You, like, go in there, and we're like, she's like, okay, this is cool. And I'm like, no, this is awesome. It's so cool.
I mean, I love board games, and I've played some Dungeons & Dragons, and, you know, so yeah. I can get into it.
Yeah, it's like I've told some people, it's like a way to massage my brain whenever I'm not completely immersed in Bonesai, and it gives me a break. Because it's pretty involved, but yeah, we could talk about that later on. But so yeah, I was just going to recap you guys on how Say Bonesai went. I know I've been talking
about it.
Yeah,
tell me everything.
It was good. So I'm actually going to say,
oh boy,
it was better than I expected it to be, you know, because, you know, I don't know if you guys saw any of the stuff that we were pushing to the Facebook, where I did, like, I just kind of slammed a week's worth of, like, reels and videos onto Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much reach that got, but it was fine. And I don't normally do that kind of stuff where I just stand in front of a camera on my phone and I'm just like, hey, I'm just going to go into this. I'm going to tell you guys what's up. And, you know, I felt super awkward, but I felt like an actual content creator for a moment there, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
the algorithm loves that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm also bad at it. So it was like, okay, I want this to
work.
And yeah, I want it to happen. You know, and like, I do look at, like, your Instagram's page, Matt, where we've talked about, where it's like, you got that really cool image. And I don't know, you told me someone's mocking those up for you.
Yeah.
And then you were able to do, like, a thing where you processed, like, a link to it and then stuck it on there. Like an audio link.
Yeah.
And maybe we need to talk about stuff like that. I don't know. That's besides what's going on right now. But yeah. I pushed Say Bonesai for a moment. I think we talked about it for a handful of months or whatever. But the premise of the show was to bring it back to home, like literally like a home base filling show, where we boil crawfish and eat gumbo and have a good time, and then we put on a bonsai show and have some have demonstrators come in and work on trees. And then have workshops afterwards where we bring those people in and they get to work with the bonsai artists, like, one-on-one. And so I had a vision for the show, and it kept compounding on, like, what my expectations were based off. And I based it off of, like, my experiences of, like, other stuff that I've seen and other places I've been thus far in my, like, little quote-unquote bonsai journey that I've had. And I just had a look for it that I wanted, and I kind of just chased that down, and it was a lot of, I'll be honest, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of, I contacted every single person that showed the trees. I know them all personally. I talked to them all personally. I even, like, went to, like, New Orleans to go pick up a handful of the trees myself for people, just to make sure the trees made it in time for me to start setting it up. And then, of course, having Mike Lane, our other part of Little Things, which, you know, we haven't had him on recent episodes. He's actually, I was going to have him on this evening, but he's teaching a class, and Mike stays really busy, but I was really fortunate enough to have him for this one. And Mike did an excellent job. He knocked it out of the park. He worked on a cedar elm, that looked like, it looked like nothing. Like, it just looked really goofy. It was like this tree that had a little weird base, and the curve in the trunk was really awkward, and it only had branches on the top and the bottom, and it didn't have anything in the middle space. It was very, very strange looking tree. I would be, like, a little intimidated by approaching material like this in front of people to do a workshop. I mean, to do a demonstration with. And Mike just nailed it. He made the tree elegant and made it very desirable. And we raffled that tree off. And then we went to lunch. I mean, people were ravenous. They ate. Yeah, Caitlin's behind me, she's laughing because she knows. They demolished the crawfish in the gumbo.
How many pounds of crawfish did you have?
I was going to ask that as well.
Yeah. And how many people did you have?
7 gallons and 4 sacks.
7 gallons of gumbo. So do the math on that. And then 4 sacks of crawfish. 120 pounds roughly, but I was supposed to get 5, but because of the way the summer was here in Louisiana, dialing down into the winter, like it got really rough and there was a shortage and then there was a high demand, of course, because it's Easter weekend, everybody bowls this weekend. Yeah. And so it was just insane. And so I actually was shorted a sack and still sold out of it. The price on it was so obscene. I don't even want to say it. Like, I'm not going to say it because it's just like, whoa, what the hell? Like, the price was so high, but we ended up blowing through all of it. It was good. I actually had three crawfish. I remember when I sat down because the show was like moving along. I felt like a wedding reception coordinator.
Oh, yeah.
This, that, and this, uh-huh. and that. You over here, me over here, put this here. That's how I felt. Then, like, I sat down for a minute with Caitlin, and she's like, you want to watch some of Guy's demonstration? I was like, sure. And I sat down and ate three crawfish. I blinked, and I was in the vendor area walking around talking to people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I forgot to mention something about the vendors. We had, Bill's Bayou was there. Bill was vending my show. We had another guy from New Orleans Club making stands. He actually had a couple of stands we put in the show. Dennis Burke. Made awesome stands. They look great. And then we had Byron Myrick was there. You know, love me some Byron. Mm-hmm. We had him a couple episodes back. He's going to be at the Texas convention in a couple of weeks with me and also Bonsai Central. Just
nice.
We're just following each other everywhere now. And then we had
your
this
besties.
New. Yeah, I guess you could say that. A lot of my trees are in his pot, so I guess you could say that. But yeah, we have an up and coming bonsai potter named Amanda Proctor. We have a couple of her pieces on our Underhill Bonsai store site right now. She's got some really great stuff, so I was happy to have her. And she actually made me a cup, like a mug, and I showed her a picture of one of my favorite trees at the nursery, and I was like, this is a really good bald cypress. I love this tree. I was like, if you want to, you can take this as an inspiration. And she took that tree and she put it onto a bonsai coffee cup, and it has that tree on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is awesome. I was like, name
that's
your price.
Really cool.
And she was like, yeah, whatever. Regular price that she would charge for like a regular coffee cup. And I was like, oh, come on. That's so awesome. You know, funny thing is I went to someone's house like a few days ago to work on a tree, and I left it at that person's house. So I was like,
no.
Yep. It's a good thing I trust that person now. So
yeah.
But yeah, we had my guy Ray Mulkey does tattooing out here for Monster Ink Tattoo in Ponchatoula, my hometown. He was selling carnivorous plants, selling like sundews and pitcher plants and Venus flytraps.
Oh, so. I was hoping that he was like giving like quick walk-in tattoos, like, you know, like a little $30 like,
oh,
one
my
inch.
God.
That'd be amazing.
Maybe
next time.
Say bonsai. Mm-hmm. I might say, Ray, get one of your kids to run your booth and then set up your shop.
Uh-huh.
And he would probably be like, oh man, that's kind of weird. But like,
if you can all get matching bonsai tattoos.
If he had a flash sheet, if he drew up like a flash sheet of like
right
of like bonsai like particular things, I would be like, dude, that would be dope.
Mm-hmm.
But then you,
yeah, I've seen artists do that. It's like here's like 10 designs. I'll do them for X amount of money. Sign up now. Here's this number of spots. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you would have to peel me away from there because I would be like soaking it up. I'd be like,
like, I want one of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that would be cool. But I've never seen that at a bonsai convention. I would think that would be dope. Like a merge of like tattoo convention and bonsai convention. But
yeah,
you know, we can dream.
I
probably make way more money doing tattoos than selling stuff.
Yeah. You would think. Some of these tattoo conventions.
Or equal.
Yeah. Some of the tattoo conventions I've heard, like, they'll sit down and open shop and then, like, they'll give, like, a great deal. So, like, I've heard people go in and get, like, a full, like half sleeve worth piece, like, from, like, the top of your shoulder down to your elbow, and it'll be, like, $300, which is usually a steal.
Wow.
Carmen, you don't have any tattoos, do you?
Not yet.
Oh, geez. If. But
I
was playing for so long and don't have a single, you haven't etched into your skin.
I know.
Permanently.
When you're done with that, I have one tattoo and I have a really cool story about it. But I already forgot this happened this weekend, but it's like going to be a defining moment in my life. I only have one tattoo at the moment, and it's a line from the musical Hamilton.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I was at a show with Amanda the other day, and at the VFW in Nashville, which is like a big place for shows, and it was this like awesome acoustic music show, great. And at the set break, I turn around in my chair just to like get a lay of the land. I was mostly thinking that for who was there playing, and this being Nashville, that there had to be some like bluegrass heavy hitters around to like see their friends out playing, because it was like a bluegrass heavy hitters band. And I turn around, and who's standing like 10 feet behind where the chairs are set up but Lin-Manuel Miranda, who, you know, wrote and created Hamilton. And I like freaked out a little bit. I didn't like freak out. I just got a little warm.
High-pitched screaming.
Yeah, I had heard he was in town, like someone said, like, oh, like, and people were trying to figure out what he was in town for. Answers still have not been made as to why he was in town.
He might have been in town for that show.
Yeah, that could entirely be. But I was just sort of like, he was there. He looked like he had a couple friends with him or whatever. And Amanda was like, you should go show him your tattoo, which she didn't know that I have always figured for about, I've had this tattoo for almost 10 years now, and that my plan was always like, if I ever had the chance to meet him, I wouldn't like just gibberish word vomit at him.
Dude.
I would just like go up and show him my tattoo. And I just kind of felt like more than anything I could say of being overexcited at the idea of, you know, meeting a genius like that, the best thing I could do is show him that something he wrote is etched on my body for the rest of my life, like that would be more impactful. And that is exactly what I did. Once I was like, I don't want to bother him, like he's just you know. And then Amanda was like, and I was like, I'm gonna do it. And I got up and I just kind of like put my hand on his shoulder. I said, excuse me, I'm so sorry to bother you, but I was like, I wanted to thank you for this great tattoo idea. And he looked at it and he goes, what? And then asked if he could take a picture of it. And so he took a picture of it.
He has a picture of your arm.
Yeah, he sure does.
That's so cool.
He sure does. He was super nice. He was super kind. And I mean, I barely said anything. All I said was, this line is... the line is the end line of the musical. It's who lives, who dies, who tells your story, which is like a whole miniature commentary on legacy and stuff like that. And he wrote in the book about Hamilton, which has like the whole, you know, libretto in it, and then his like notes about it. He says about that it was, quote, the realest thing he'd ever written. And I said to him, I was like, you said in the Hamilton that this was like the realest thing you'd ever written. And he goes, it kind of is. And I said, so I thought it was like the realest thing I could get for the first tattoo and maybe, you know, possibly the only one I'd ever have. Yeah. And so he took a picture and I was just like, all right, I hope you have a great rest of your night. And then went and sat back down.
Like, yep, there you go.
I didn't want to make it like awkward and be like, can we get a picture or anything? Like, I did exactly what I set out to do for a decade. Yeah, but like, what a cool thing.
You should have had him sign it and then gone to your tattoo person and had them like go over it with
man.
The ink. That's okay. Next time.
You done goofed.
No, that's
that
okay.
That might have been weird.
No, I bet he would have done it. I bet he thought it would have been fine. It's just...
That's so cool.
Especially because like I have worked with enough people that are what you would consider famous that it's just like knowing what they, even when they're the nicest people, like hate... Or like just being time appropriate and stuff. It just kind of being like, that's why I always knew that being such a fan of Hamilton as I was when it was at like peak Hamilton time was just like, I just want to show him this thing so that he knows that I care. And that's it, you know, and did exactly that. So
he's going to go show all of his Hamilton friends. Like, I bet he texted like the group chat of Hamilton, like, oh my God, look at this guy's arm. He got a tattoo of this.
I bet he did.
Now everybody in like Hamilton knows about your arm. They all have a picture of your arm on their phones.
I bet that's true. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
Thanks for commandeering the podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Just
kidding. All right, well.
You're in our world now.
I won't say a word while you guys are riffing about Trident maples, so whatever.
No. I'm messing with you.
I know.
It's like a weird fusion. No, it's fine. We do need like little side stories and little like inputs outside of Boneside, because I mean these things all are very relevant. I mean, these are all things like I think about a lot of stuff in in music versus with the way that I look at Boneside. I think me and Matt have talked about this past in some previous episodes and stuff, mm-hmm. or even on the Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know episode, where, you know, it's all kind of intrinsic in a way where I whenever you're talking about your podcast where you talk about people in the music industry and how they navigate that, I actually listened to another podcast where a guy was interviewing people similar to how you do. And it was about like how they promoted themselves and made the business work in the music world. And I actually used some of those little tips and tricks in my own life as doing Boneside and stuff. And it works. It's kind of like tried and true for different fields in art and in, you know, understanding those types of things. It's 'cause they're all weird. It's like there's no books, there's no writing or anything. So on how to do it.
I always say I learn so much about music from sources that are not music at all. The thing that I'm always quoted as saying, and I don't think I've said it here at all or on when you were on my show, but I've learned more about being a musician from the documentary Jiro Dreams of Sushi than any other musical than any musical source.
Yeah.
Like learning about like passion and like dedication and creativity and all these kinds of things, like they are all applicable back to music, but it's a documentary about sushi. So, you know, always drive stuff, you know.
You'll have to text that to me because I'm not going to remember after this recording, but I think that would be an interesting watch. Back on recap of Say Boneside, I think we had about 40 trees on display. I got every tree on a stand, which is phenomenal because it's very hard to get that to work out. But I do have to do a shout out to to Randy Bennett again. He brought in a lot of like really nice stands that he's collected over his years of doing Boneside. And he just lent them to people that needed them. It was beautiful.
Nice.
And we had a couple of stands around the nursery that worked as well. But everybody's tree was on a stand. There was accent plants and suiseki that Randy and Guy Guidry both provided. It was an amazing amount of just viewing stones, kusamuno plantings, and then the trees were phenomenal. And then we got in Josh Broom and Jessica Broom. Jessica is a photographer in our local area. She's worked with a couple of other good photographers, and she took every tree in that show. Her and her husband took every tree in that show, put it against a professional backdrop with lighting, and took a picture of every single tree. It was incredible.
That's so awesome.
We're going to try to get together a commemorative book. It's not going to be anything out there crazy, but it's going to be something where we put it to print and the people that attended the show could see it. And it also could be a showcase of how that looked. We presented awards around 4:00. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention. Yeah, Mike went on, and then Guy went on, around like past lunchtime after we sold out of all the gumbo and all the crawfish. And Guy's show, it wasn't a demonstration. It was like the Guy Guidry show. It was insane. at one point there was a splash zone, and he was but it's not what you think. But he had like a splash zone area.
Wait, what would I be thinking?
I know, so you just went, ew, like it was like gross or something. No, it was more like he was carving on Trident maples. Good thing that's our secondary topic of this episode. He was carving Trident maples with a die grinder fitted with a chainsaw bit head. A brutal
was he wearing
tool.
Eye protection?
He wears like reading glasses you get from Walgreens? So he's wearing those.
Okay.
They're like his readers.
So that's no.
Yeah, they were not official, wraparound protection. But yeah, he was going for it. And I mean, like he's cutting through these trees like butter, and it's just shooting wood chips into the crowd. And there's people, we have a picture of people in the front row like shielding their eyes. It's pretty awesome. And so yeah, he put on a whole thing, and he did a lot more than he should, but he did enough that he got it all done. But dude, like after I went up on the stage and he wrapped up, and I was like, all right, did you guys enjoy Guy's demonstration? Everybody's like, yeah, that was great. And I go up there and I'm like, put my arm around Guy to be like, good job, buddy. And he's sopping wet. from he's just like put this all into it. He was so sweaty, it was funny. But he had the biggest smile on his face, and I was like, I was happy for him and for the way the show had been going through. And then we kind of took a moment to go through the trees again to think about how the awards are going to be handed out. And dude, I don't know if you've ever had part in judging a bonsai show, Carmen. It's
I've not, but I've had to go through the bonsai yard and rank trees here, so I have a I can only imagine what it's like at a show. It's
And so you're ranking it off of all these different factors, and then of course we got trees in the show that I know everybody, so it's like I can't be biased on any of this stuff, and so I'm like having to really go through it, and I'm like, I got Mike and Guy side by side here. I'm just like, you guys, let's huddle around, let's make this decision. And I mean, we like had to go through it like three different times, like, okay, this is best in show, this is People's Choice Award, which is kind of a chosen because that was chosen by a vote, by a common vote. And then Joshua Roth did a best classical design, and I wanted to keep it simple because we didn't have that many trees, and I didn't want to sit there all day handing all these awards, and it didn't feel as special, you know. Maybe the next time we do it, we'll have like one more award, because I really wanted to do a Shohin award because it was some really awesome Shohin, but next time. And so we just went back and forth deliberating over and over, and I was like, okay, this is it. And so we finally came to it, and we had a guy come down from North Carolina. His name was Rusty McClain, I think, or McCain. But he had this beautiful composition of a Kingsville boxwood and a Trident maple forest on a piece of granite that was like cracked from like from someone's kitchen. And it was long and narrow, and it had like these five Trident maples on it, like a little miniature forest. And then the tree was up higher on like, it was like a Shohin kind of like 2-point display, but it was set up really interesting because he had the tree up to the left, and it had this metal ring from a whiskey barrel screwed onto the back of it, like encapsulating the tree on the top. And then on the side of that, facing towards the Trident maples, there was a pair of bonsai scissors that were like old and rusted, and they were like welded into the stand.
Ooh.
As like a, I don't know, just an extra feature. And then it was just such a crazy design, and it all worked. And he won People's Choice Award because like everybody was just like, what is going on?
That's so cool.
It was so intriguing. If you go over to like our Facebook page, I think it's shown on there. You can go to Facebook and you go to the guy's profile. He's been posting about it. He had a blast, and he was like our guy that drove the furthest. So I was glad that, Florida was our other farthest drive. It was like 10 hours from somewhere in Florida. So I mean, there was a handful of people that came from all different locations, mostly Louisiana stuff, but we had people from out of state, and it was pretty awesome. And then I said earlier, Joshua Roth, best classical design, went to Randy Bennett and his Bald Cypress, and that tree, seeing that tree in person, literally blow you away. And it's got, he has a technique where he's developed where he's grown knees directly onto the tree after collection. Just an awesome tree. And then the best in show, it was kind of weird because I had encouraged my buddy Chase to show his first tree that he like had that he was actually proud of. It was a Japanese boxwood that I actually designed with him. And then he took it home and he prepped it and stuff and painted it with lime sulfur, cleaned it up, mossed it. He shined the pot up with vegetable oil when he got to the show. He bought a bonsai stand. He got an accent pot for plant for his tree. And then I was talking to Guy and Mike, and I'm like, what is the best tree in the show? And they were both like, that tree has something special. It doesn't look like any of the trees in the show, and it feels old, it feels ancient, it feels like a proper bonsai. It makes you gives you this feeling that is undescribable from some of the other trees in here. I was like, are you guys sure? And I didn't, because like I said, I had to be unbiased about it. And they're like, yeah, that was it. And we presented best in show to like my friend Chase. He's one of our bonsai best buds. It's kind of funny too. And it was just like a weird feeling. I was like, Chase Pertwee, you know, and everybody's like, yay. And he's like, what the heck? Like Chase literally stood up and was like, what the heck? Like, you know, like and he was like, no way. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it happened. But like, it just showed like, even if you have like, and he literally only has two trees. And some people have like dozens of trees. And it just shows like, if you put enough care and enough thought into it, and then this just the way that it's presented. I mean,
quality over quantity, you know?
I guess so. And now that gives him a reason he'll never get rid of that tree ever, because he'll have fun with it. So that's cool. But yeah, then after that, we moved into the workshops. And I mean, it was a long day. I mean, we started at 9:30 and we didn't cut out until like 7 or 8 o'clock. And so we set up the show, ran the show all day, no breaks, just like one event to the next, and then wrapped it up at 6 o'clock and broke down until 7:30 or so, and took everything out of the tent. And so yeah, if you guys go over to like look at our website, or well, not our website, but like our social media stuff, you'll see like a recap of the show and some postings and stuff. And some of the trees in there were like 6 hand trees, like, so it took 3 people to lift them. Guys,
wow.
Fumina juniper forest took like 5 people just to like safely lift it and move it. So there was just big trees in the show, and I did not expect it to be that grandiose with those big trees, you know what I mean? So yeah, all around it was a good time. So but yeah, we're definitely gonna do it again. So 2026. Yay. Yeah, we're gonna do 2026. We're gonna give ourselves a break.
Okay.
Yeah. But
all right, put me on the list.
Yep. We're already talking about Little Things Live, so don't worry about that. Yeah.
Excellent. Hooray.
Yeah. So we'll see when we get there, but we're giving ourselves a little bit more time, because that was a lot. And I think doing it every year, I could see why the national show was every other year.
Yeah. You
know? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of stress. And we're going to form a committee by that time comes around. But yeah, it's a lot, especially for me running a bonsai nursery, running classes and teaching and stuff, and doing all that, like going around and teaching. I just came back from Texas, and then I'll be doing Texas again, and then St. Louis, and then I'll be doing Cincinnati. And I'm just like, okay, like there needs to be a break. And then my kid's coming in July, when I have a child, so I want to give myself some time to enjoy that for a year, and then when you pick up 2 years from now, it'll be great, and everybody's trees will be fresh and new, and we'll have some more stuff to look at, and we'll build a little bit more of a thing going on. So yeah, I want it to be bigger and better each time. So yeah, just take it and do one step at a time with it. So it was a good time.
Cool. So. Yeah, you definitely need a committee. I mean, I used to be on the board for a local sports club here. And we would do a tournament every year, and that alone like killed the board. It got to the point where we had to like have a separate committee for the tournament that just had to report back to the board. So yeah, the more you can, like, you just don't, something in business stuff that I've been kind of having on my radar lately is like, you just need to like stop wearing all the hats.
Yeah. I was the vendor coordinator. I was the tree.
Yeah.
Onsite tree wrangler. I put all the trees in the show. I coordinated with Mike and Guy. Yeah, it was a lot. And then you know, like my wife Caitlin stayed home all day Friday and made all that gumbo. And it was insane.
Is she really?
Yes. She made that gumbo. And you're like, you know, I've made
I
you
thought
gumbo
you would have bought that in. Oh my gosh.
Nope.
No, you can't do that. That's you can't. Oh,
that's
gosh,
disingenuous
that would be.
To
yeah,
the
yeah.
Southern
Ooh,
culture. I'm
that's
so serious.
True.
If you
no,
came in
I
with
mean,
bags of gumbo and heated it up, dude, people would be slapping it out of your hands. You'd be like, here's your cup of gumbo. They would be like, slap it and be like, what is that? You know, like,
true.
Like, we're pretty serious down here. Like, that's what I wanted to make sure with the show, too, is like I said, it's like home Louisiana, home cooking, it has to be right. Because if we brought in like boiled Chinese crawfish, like little tiny crawfish, and then threw seasoning on top of it, and like there it is, oh my God.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't work.
Everyone would have left, you know, like they wouldn't even stuck around for anything.
You should have a gumbo competition at your next one so that Caitlin doesn't have to make all of it. And you have like a few people make a bunch of gumbo, and then like.
This is an idea.
You know.
And then we could present a best gumbo award. That would be dope. I think that would be kind of funny. I think that would be cool. So everybody goes around, it's like, sample everyone's gumbo, and it would help push like kind of the stuff on like, so you have to buy gumbo, so they have to buy like a cup of gumbo for each person. That would be cool. That would be innovative.
Yeah. Like, yeah, like a chili cook-off vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. But like a mini show. You know, so we're going to run a mini tattoo convention with Ray doing tattoos, a mini gumbo cook-off, and a mini bonsai show. actually, Bonsai Show encompassing it. No, it's just, you know, it's not going to work. But
I mean, I think there's a lot of space within Bonsai Shows to expand.
And play.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it doesn't always have to just be all Bonsai all the time. You can do Bonsai adjacent, you know, if you're going to feed people.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. You're going to do Say Bonsai, but not in Louisiana, like somewhere far away. But you're going to bring crawfish and you're going to teach people how to eat crawfish.
Oh, God. Talk about like getting live crawfish and then just like trucking it and keeping them all alive in another location. And then,
I mean, it depends. Like, you know, we get stuff brought up here to Nashville.
Yeah. And
a solid 9 hours.
Yeah. There you go. And they'll survive, we know. But like getting there and setting it up and, yeah, I think, yeah, Matt, I know what you're alluding to, Matt, is like, yeah, teaching people how to eat crawfish. It's always like that thing. They're always like, what in the hell are you doing? Because it's a mini lobster and the way you have to peel it. And there's always that question is like, are you going to suck the head? And the people are always like, what? No, you're like that. But some people clean them up. And that's a huge
part of it. Also, it's like a, you know, it's such a cultural thing. Like I get my ass kicked at every single crawfish boil I go to. Like I'm just not as fast, you know, but I've only been doing it for what, like, well, it'll be 6 years and, well, not even, it was like a year of dating Amanda before I was at an actual boil, so like 5 years, as opposed to people who are doing it their entire lives, where like if you can't do it by age five, your parents are leaving you behind in the dust.
Yeah, it's like, you hear that, Carmen? It's like, if you can't eat fast enough in Louisiana, you're just shamed.
Yeah, just shame. I'm gonna have to practice, I guess, because I've had crawfish once in my life and I was real slow.
Yeah, there's an art to it. But also, Matt, really quick, how many years? By the way, happy anniversary. I know we talked earlier.
Thanks.
Yeah, I just wanted to put that out there.
Is that today?
No, it was the 26th, which is fine. Okay. I mean, like, Evan, like, texted and apologized. My mom forgot until the other day.
Oh, hey, Carmen, did I tell you about Bonsai Central yet?
No, I don't think you have.
Oh, I think I might have mentioned it a few other times, but it's going to be May 3rd through 5th in 2024 in St. Louis, Missouri. It's basically the national show, but it's going to be Central America, and it's going to be an awesome show with cash awards and prizes. There's going to be a professional bonsai show and a kusamono show as well.
Ooh.
With the presentation during dinner with for rewards and whatnot. But if you want to submit a tree, I think you have to submit 2 to 4 photos, and you need a brief description of your tree and send it over to the contact form at bonsaicentral.com. That's bonsai-central.com. But I think there's going to be vendors there too. Do you know what vendors were included? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I heard that it's going to be something like 25 plus of the best vendors from around the country. So like including nurseries, potters, stand makers, tool suppliers, and all of that.
But like specifically, I thought I heard that there was going to be American potters. Like,
oh yeah, totally. Yeah, now Tochi Take is going to be there. Vicky Chamberlain, Eli Atkins of Waldo Street Pottery, April Grigsby, Roy Minari, and Byron Merrick. Sellers of imported Japanese and antique Chinese pots are going to be there too.
That's amazing. I mean, there must be like a pretty good lineup for this show as far as like their headliners. There should be some really good bonsai artists. Do you have any idea who that might be? I think I might have heard about Bjorn, but there's some other ones, right?
Oh yeah, Bjorn's going to be there. Tyler Sherrod as well. Maria Hayek, Andrew Robson, Mauro Stemberger, and Young Cho.
Oh.
I think there's going to be workshops, show walkthroughs, critiques, all that stuff.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. There should be somewhere to go on bonsai-central.com, and you can fill out the opportunities to do workshops with these professionals. They have really great material, I've heard. It's going to be stuff like twisted junipers and old fused maples and really awesome pieces of material for Young's kusamono class. So I think if you guys are interested, y'all should go check out bonsai-central.com and see if you can register for the show, sign up for workshops if they're still available. But I'll definitely be there this year.
Awesome. That's sweet.
Yeah, thank you, Bonsai Central, for sponsoring our show.
Hey, everyone. This is John Eads, founder of Left Coast Bonsai and proud supporter of the Little Things for Bonsai People podcast. I'm breaking into your feed today to let you know about a few exciting things we're doing here at Left Coast Bonsai. We're a small, family-owned bonsai nursery that's focused on producing high-quality bonsai plant material, as well as sourcing hard-to-find supplies for growing in your own yard. For many of us, winter is a time to pause and reflect on the year ahead. Now's a good time to decide what seedlings and supplies you need for the upcoming season. We have a large selection of seedlings that will begin shipping out mid-February for our spring season. You can also order baskets, felt bags, or aluminum wire. In addition to the seedlings and supplies, I also teach classes and study groups on a broad range of subjects, including growing trees from scratch. I hope to hear from you soon and would love to talk about how we can support your bonsai growing journey. You can find us online at leftcoastbonsai.com, on Instagram at leftcoastbonsai, or send me an email at talk@leftcoastbonsai.com. Cheers!
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
So let's break into the Trident maples a little bit. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. Matt, are you ready for Trident maples for a moment?
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you guys trivia questions about Trident maples?
No, yes. Actually, you know what's funny is that I think Trident maples are one of the more appropriate species to do this with because they seem to be like an all-around bonsai where it's like, I think everyone and their grandma has a Trident maple.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, do you find that too, Carmen?
Yeah, a lot of people have Trident maple. I think maybe the only other thing that they have more than Trident maple is Japanese maple. But yeah, Tridents are
very common.
Good, common, easy-ish tree to work with. So
yeah. So what kind of trivia would you do? That's kind of funny.
Well, I looked up the North Carolina State University has a page about Trident maples.
Okay.
Like they have a wiki. They have a wiki. So like,
wow. Okay.
That's just full of information about them. So
okay.
Excellent.
Much like when you guys did Christmas trivia without me.
Shame.
You can come to next Christmas trivia.
Oh, I will.
He's ready.
You were probably sitting there listening to the Christmas trivia episode, just being like, oh, I know the answer. I know.
Yeah, I know all the answers.
Absolutely. And everybody seemed to be having so much fun. And I'm just sitting here alone in my recording studio.
We forgot to invite our editor to our Christmas party. Sorry. Yep.
No. Actually, I believe I was asked to join and I just couldn't that time.
Well, never mind then.
I love how bitter he is about it because he did bring that up to me later on. He's like, and you forgot to thank me. And I was like, oh, come on, man.
You guys were talking about the growth of the show and how good last year was. And I was like, well,
I guess I wasn't part of it.
Get your episodes out on time and stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you for
all right, enjoying. All right.
We're going to do a thank you, Matt episode on the next one.
Let's calm
it
down.
It's going to be all about
Matt. Yeah, watch that listener count plummet.
Yeah. No, it's not like that. But anyway, so you got Trident maple things that you found. How's this go?
Yes. All right. What family is the Trident maple in?
Oh, Sapindaliaceae.
Are you serious? Do you know that?
Yeah, that's right.
Get it right or pay the price.
Jeez. No, you got to go a little bit slower than that, Matt. You got to go slower. My brain is okay. So smooth when it comes to this type of stuff. So you're like coming straight out of the horticulture 101 stuff that like Carmen went to school for this and I did not. So.
Okay. Well, all right.
It was
fine.
The TA for like plant nomenclature, so whatever.
Okay, then what is the more common? What is the more common name for that family?
Aceraceae.
I was gonna go with soapberry because that's what it says, but you know,
soapberry. That's weird.
Nobody's ever heard of that.
Well,
what the hell's take a it up soapberry?
With take it up with North Carolina State University.
I will.
Yeah.
That's not a thing.
That's weird.
Okay. Cool. What? What, obviously not for bonsai, but what is the maximum height that a Trident maple will grow to?
That's cool. I like it whenever they ask that. I love knowing the maximum height of trees. I would guess like 60 feet.
I'm going to go with 150 feet.
Yeah.
You are both over. It is. The range of height is 25 feet to 35 feet.
Oh, it's a short boy tree. Okay.
Well, yeah. We do bonsai, okay?
Well, that's why I said. Yeah. I said to start. I thought that would be a thing.
It's more like a hedge maple. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's kind of cool because, yeah, they do have a tendency to have smaller leaves and have all the, like, the attributes of a short tree. But, like, it makes me think of, like, one of my favorite elms here, the winged elm. It reaches, like, the max height of, like, almost 50 to 60 feet, depending on its environment, surrounding, and stuff like that. But trident maple, I've never seen one just like lawfully, just like chilling in like its natural environment. I don't think most people do because it's such a commercially available plant now.
I don't think I've ever seen one in the landscape here. So
you can grow it here in Louisiana in the ground and let it rip, but it grows into just a big flame shape because we grow them in the grow fields out here for Underhill and we cut them in and stuff. Yeah. But they'll grow into a big giant flame. So yeah, I guess it is kind of like a shrub, like a giant shrub maple. Okay.
An understory tree.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. What is the fruit type of the trident maple?
Oh God.
Ooh. It's a winged samara.
That is correct.
She's just pulling the shit out of her butt. She doesn't know all this.
I just have the webpage
open. She's on the webpage.
No, I shouldn't have.
I don't.
I know that's true, but now I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have said anything.
She's also applying just generalized knowledge of like maples and stuff. I know what you're doing, but also you know all the words, so never mind. Yeah, I don't know anything about that. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, then, Evan, you get the first answer on this. What color are the flowers of the trident maple?
I would say they're red. Smiling.
Carmen?
Oh, you know, this is one I haven't actually seen bloom. I've seen all the other maples in the yard bloom, but I haven't seen this one bloom. So I'm going to go with yellow.
That is correct.
Oh, yes! God. Dang it, dude. What is going on here? Is this like, this is just the Evan Shame show. It's like, he's going to talk about this, like, this bonsai show he put on and how, like, how good it was and how he felt.
Well,
and then
no, like you said, I did go to school for this. So, like,
a color of a plant that you've never seen before and you just guessed at it and got it right.
Well, okay. I mean, if I'm comparing it to the other maples that are very similar to it, it probably isn't going to have the same pink flowers that a lot of the Japanese maples have.
Yeah.
It's probably not white. So there's a lot of yellow maples blooming right now in Portland. So I went with the common color.
Makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think they will bloom necessarily because they are more of a commercial plant. Normally commercial plants are engineered in, I don't know if that's a real thing.
Well, it depends on when and how you prune it too, because like our Japanese maples are all starting to bloom right now,
which is awesome, you know.
But yeah, the trident maples, I don't know if I've ever seen those bloom.
Yep. Anyway,
all right, one more question. What is the optimal soil pH for the trident maple?
I'm gonna say it's probably 6.4. Final answer.
Carmen?
I was going to say 6.5.
6.5.
According to this page, the top end of that range should be 6.1.
Wow.
So you're both quite close.
Yeah.
Look at you go.
Wow. It likes it very acidic. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. Because also one of the things that I know this from experience. I have that client that I've been talking to you about, Carmen. He's in Slidell and he's off of City Water. And their City Water is very alkaline. Mm-hmm. And then I was over in Austin and some parts of Austin, Texas. These people have very alkaline water in their parts of wherever they're in, depending on if it's new construction, like it's like a new expansion. The water treatment usually is pretty crazy over there. It's like super high alkaline waters. And of course, they're like hard and they don't really fare well with that kind of stuff.
Uh-uh.
That's what we've been talking about. So,
yeah. Yeah, but that's a common problem to have a high pH. And you didn't even ask the species.
Oh, sorry. Well,
it's a fun one.
I was just, I was just picking random things.
I know what the, I know the nomenclature.
Okay, then Evan, what is the species of the trident?
I want to hear him say this one. It's a big one.
It's a it's a weird one, but I'm gonna say it'd be like the wheel the no, it's like the what is it? It's not Wheel of Fortune. Yeah, it is the Wheel of Fortune where that this person says it really wrong. I'm gonna say Acer Burgerarium.
Yeah, that is close enough for jazz.
Close enough.
I know it's Acer Burgerarium, but if I wanted to say Burgerarium, because, you know.
Burgerarium.
Yeah. Because, you know.
I'm going to open a Burgerarium, and everybody gets fries.
Yeah.
Oh, man, a bonsai garden where you just get given a, like, cup of fries to go around while you eat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, wait, sorry, one more question. What is the general region of origin for the Trident Maple?
Ooh, I'm going to say, okay, Korea.
Everything's from Asia.
I'm going to say it's like Korea going down into East China.
That is correct. It is Eastern China, Japan, and Korea.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
Anyway.
That's one of the only things I know because... Other than the nomenclature, I know. I like to know geometrically. Wow.
Geographically,
where trees are shaped. I mean, located where they come from. so that I can kind of get like a I can justify like why they do well in certain ranges.
That
so
makes sense.
That helps out. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
That makes a lot of sense.
But anyway, yeah, that's a lot more fun than going through a list of stuff for Trident Maple. I mean, we could go through it and like really hammer on some Trident Maple techniques, but we could save that for another episode where we talk because they're great for other things too. I mean, obviously for the listeners out there that don't know what Trident Maples are, like we said, I feel like a lot of people have these. They come up a lot. I see them in almost every bonsai group. Whenever you go to like a club meeting and stuff, you see them show up a lot. So it's a small maple. It's got an exfoliating bark, can be kind of pale tan to like orangey whenever it exfoliates. It's a beautiful bark. And they have a really small tripoint leaf. That's why they call them trident maple. Okay, 3 points. It's a fun fact there. And they do really well to like bonsai culture and pot, like planted container culture. They do really well. Their roots get really, really dense and they get this melty base, kind of like. Kind of reminds me of like crepe myrtles do, where they just all the roots fuse together and they get really beautiful bases on them. They're really good for grafting and fusion techniques. Like, so I know there's like this whole technique, I can't remember where it originated from, but where they'll take a bunch of trident maple whips and tie them around like a cage shape to like get a shape, and they'll fuse all those whips together into like the perfect shape of a tapered Hershey Kiss bonsai shape. It's just some really cool things you can do with trident maples. And but I know that there's, I think, Carmen, since you have a little bit more experience and you've done a lot more refinement work, because where I'm at with trident maples is like I grow them in our grow fields by like the thousands. I've got so many trident maples at the nursery, but I don't get to bring them to refinement very often because they are a big ask to keep thousands of maples refined. So I'm always in developmental stages, and I'm getting a few to a point where I can do refinement stuff with them, but I feel like you should touch on some of the pinching things and how trident maples, I've heard other people say this, that they're a pain in the ass when it comes to the pinching on them.
Trident maple, it's a incredibly fast growing, prolific maple. And depending where you're located, they can be a lot of work. So back in Michigan and here in Portland, we really only do one defoliation. But I remember Bjorn saying once in Nashville, he could defoliate a trident maple 2 or 3 times a season, which is like, wow, that's a lot of work. But one of the things I love about trident maples is that they get really kind of knobbly, and if you don't keep up on the pruning when you're in the refinement phase, you get a lot of buds kind of coming out from the same spot, and you can get all these, you know, knobs and bumps and weird stuff. So it can be really good for the shape and the movement of the tree and to create interest, but it can also create a lot of problems really fast if you don't maintain it. Mm-hmm. So we usually let our trident maples expand in the spring. Once they harden off, we go back and prune back the new growth. And then we'll do usually a partial defoliation where we take off most of the outer leaves. We leave some of the stuff on the inside. And so that will reduce your leaf size when they come back out, and it will allow more light into the center of the tree to create more buds closer into the trunk. After the second expansion, sometimes if there's a really strong branch, we'll go in and shorten it, but then we wait until fall to do our actual structural pruning and detail pruning. So spring, summer is a lot of just growing. When you have a trident maple that's in refinement that you don't want your extensions to extend, we do this more with Japanese maple, but you can do it with trident maple too. You want to pinch out that center point. So once it starts to expand in the spring, there's, puts out its two leaves, and then it's, the shoot keeps growing. And so a lot of times you'll cut back or pinch back to those first two leaves. If you want your branch a little bit longer, you can leave two pairs of leaves. And that can be a real pain. I'm actually doing that with a Japanese maple right now, but it's a lot of work. If you have a 1,000 trident maples, it's going to take a lot of time.
You're pinching a lot of buds, and since they compartmentalize so fast, and you pinch one bud, and then it turns into two, and then four, and then 16, and then 38, and whatever the numbers are, you can refine a branch on a trident maple fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Especially in warmer regions like in Louisiana, because they grow like a weed here, like no joke.
Yeah, I wonder how many times you could probably defoliate two or three times a season.
I've seen some people do some. I can do the same thing as what you mentioned with like Bjorn, because Nashville is comparable. It's very comparable to here. Yeah. So it's a lot warmer throughout the year, but he gets the same temperatures that he would have gotten in Nashville. Mm-hmm. They're quite a crazy, vigorous, top dominant tree. But also, if you control them, they're easy to flip the energy. So it doesn't just blow out at the top all the time. You can actually get it to slow down and then, strengthen lower branches pretty easy on it, which is kind of cool. I feel like it's like bald cypress here for me. There, here I go. It's like
bald
a
bald cypress.
God dang.
Do you like bald cypress?
I might. So bald cypresses are so easy to control, but yet it's so easy to get them to back bud. I've never, ever have had an issue with getting a bald cypress to throw me a branch or a bud where I would like something to come up.
Yeah.
Whereas with a trident maple, this is probably something you could probably fill in a little bit too, is I've got this one trident maple, for instance. I've grown out my first branch and I got a back branch, and then I got my canopy branches, but my second branch died on me. And I can see the buds on the trunk, but I can't get it to fire off. And I might have to just go in, because it's already done first extension and it's done first flush. Mm-hmm. I might have to go back and prune really hard and leave that area open and then pinch those other ones out until something happens.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're thinking?
Or just let it get really, really strong and eventually it'll throw something. I mean, our trident maples put out buds in the crotches, on the bottoms of the branches, five in the same spot. Like, constantly, we're just constantly like rubbing buds off of them. So I think just get it really strong and then do a good solid prune and it should throw something for you.
And I was also considering on like literally doing a thread graft.
Yeah, that's probably faster and more guaranteed.
Yeah. A thread graft, for our listeners out there, that's whenever I go in and I make the tree do what I want. No, that's whenever I go in and I like take a really long drill bit that's like it's a regular drill bit, but it's got a long shaft. It could be like anywhere from 10 inches to 18 inches, whatever. It just depends on how obnoxious like your drill bit needs to be compared to how thick your tree is. I work with a lot of thick trees, THICC. I need longer drill bits. So I'll go through and I'll drill through one side of the tree. I'll take a really long shoot that I've intentionally let to run like 2 or 3 feet. and I'll drill a hole and I'll run that shoot. I'll strip the leaves off and leave all the buds intact and run that shoot back around through the tree like a thread, like a threading a needle with the tree. And I'm going to put that branch exactly where I want it. And it's going to fire off whenever that branch opens back up after I do a defoliation. And it's going to fire that bud off. And then it's going to fuse into that part of that tree. And then it's going to take, and then I'm going to cut the other side of the thread off once it swells and gets bigger on the other side. And boom. Mm-hmm. And Trident maples are so willing to fuse. It's just another one of those trees where it's like, here you go. Something else. It's another technique that could be a great advantage. And if you haven't thread grafted a tree, and for our people out there listening who are interested in this kind of stuff, I have had to thread graft American hornbeams because they're super stubborn on bud bat.
Oh, they are the worst.
And I thread grafted one on my big boy in my backyard, my big American hornbeam. One took, it's the best branch on the tree. It looks great. It filled in the spot just like I needed to. The second one didn't. So that's one of the things I recommend too, is like, run yourself a few and see what works, see what doesn't. Some species are weaker, and some species don't have buds in certain areas just because maybe the wood right there, the cambium, there's something wrong. I don't know. I've had some issues with threads in the past, but I mean, that's why when people do scion grafts, I feel like you should double up on your scion grafts. Thread grafts, you don't need to do nearly as many because it's a pretty successful take.
Yeah, it's very successful.
But every once in a while, if you push the branch through and you break all your buds off in the process, and then it doesn't bud where you want it, because you want, here's a thread graft thing. It's like bonsai word of the week. Let's go back to what we used to do that. And I'll just say really quick, because we're going to start closing the show out, because we're at our point now. Because I know Matt's having the best time of his life talking technical techniques with
he's
with
got Trident. Like a dum-dum or something. He's good.
Yeah, I sure do.
I really want one of those. That looks good.
He's just snacking. Like, you'd fit in really well, like a bonsai show, like where people, like someone's
just
doing a demo.
Around, like with a sucker.
And he's just hanging out. Yeah, just doing his thing.
These are my way to not take in a bunch of calories snacking. Yeah. When I have like oral fixation moments.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fun. That makes sense. But yeah, for thread grafting, just to close it out. Thread graft, drill a hole through the tree, put a branch that you intentionally leave long and strong. Okay, I'm just gonna let that hang out there and open.
you
pull it all the way through the tree, and you're gonna put your Okay, you're gonna put buds intentionally as close as you can to the trunk so that you can get your first bifurcation close to the trunk in proximity to the proportion and the location on the tree. So what do I mean by that? First branch, your first bifurcation should happen close to the trunk, but not so close to the trunk that it's kind of like the distance, depending on the height of your tree and proportions. It's like kind of ridiculous. Like there should be like a millimeter and then a split. They should have like a quarter inch or a half inch. And then there's a first bifurcation. So as you go up your tree, the number of branches and refinement should start happening tighter and tighter, and your internode lengths should be shorter and shorter. So if you're thread grafting higher up in the tree, pro tip, you can make the interlude, you can play with the internode length right there, right when you thread graft through the tree. It's amazing. It's a great technique. So I cracked my knuckles because I'm like, yeah, that was a good one. I like drawing those things together because it's like, these little flexible things that you can think about, because
it's the little things.
It's the little things that really makes bonsai interesting and lets you know how malleable trees are, how easy trees are to like just like Frankenstein. Like we're Frankensteining parts here by grafting and threading and stuff, and root grafts are another thing. And it's just there's so much we can do to make great bonsai material out of just mundane stuff, you know. Trident maple is a mundane piece of material to most people. It's like the Verklemans Dana, Green Mountain.
It's the bread and butter of bonsai.
It's a quote unquote boring tree, but you can make
the burgers of bonsai.
It is. It is the Acer burger of like, you know, it's like the Acer Green Mountain Juniper is like the taco, and like the Acer Burgerium is the burger. It's just like basic American cuisine. It's like if you could, but you can
Which
make
Which one's
it,
the hot dog?
Probably
Lodgepole Pine. No.
No, probably the Chinese elm. Chinese Elm is definitely the hot dog.
That's the hot dog.
That one's such a like a lame tree, but such a good tree at the same time. But anyway,
hot dogs are delicious.
Exactly. So if you're a master at American cuisine, you can master and make some really great trees out of these really mundane trees, out of these really great species. So yeah, master making hot dogs, hamburgers, and tacos, and you could master. By the way, taco is a Tex-Mex, so that is American cuisine. Don't challenge me on that. But yeah, like that's how you get good at bonsai. Get good, make good hamburgers, make good hot dogs, make good Trident maples, make good Cummins Annis. I don't know. I'm just going off on a tangent, you know. What? Anyway, just thought it was that was a good side note. So for our listeners,
well,
out there.
Just kind of going off your thread grafting. You mentioned root grafting. Trident maples are great for root grafting. So if you have a gap in your roots or whatever, taking whips and, you know, kind of doing a little approach graft right up against that trunk, right into your root zone there, you can really fix your Nabari quickly and pretty easily with that technique. So
you put a root exactly where you need it, put a branch exactly where you can use. Here's a really cool thing. We'll just kind of close out on the thread grafting. Root graft a root right where you need it. Take that same root because, a root graft is also a whip that we, so you take a cutting off your tree, stick it on the side of the container so that the roots grow out one direction. So that's easier to take the roots in the proper direction you need them. Then whenever the roots take and you're ready to do your root graft, you stick your root graft and you approach graft it into the root system. You take it into that whip and you thread it through the tree.
Oh my God. You just blew my mind.
Stone. Wow. Yeah. Welcome to working in a bonsai nursery. Like it's kind
welcome of, to Burger Bonsai.
Yeah, welcome to Burger Building. First the pickles. No,
and we
so,
have a t-shirt that's a Trident maple in a bun.
That would be weird. I'm going to talk to my graphics guy and see how you're going to approach that design. That is so weird. I've never heard that before. I'll see what you can do.
Burgerarium.
Yeah. Dude, I think we might be onto something. But yeah. So yeah,
anyway.
For our listeners, if you listen this far, thank you so much for listening. Also, I apologize.
It's almost dinner time, so.
This went a really weird way, really fast. It went sideways.
Sorry.
Anyway. Yeah, sorry if it's your first episode, but also congratulations. You've made it towards the end of the episode here. Woo. And thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. Even if you're just listening, it supports the show, of course. And like we always say at the end of the episodes, we always do little shout-outs. So it's like, go over to underhillbonsai.com. Go read some articles that I've written. Go over to underhillstore.com, go buy some cool stuff that I've created, such as bonsai and t-shirts for the show and the little things tab. Go to Instagram, check out some of our stuff that's pretty similar to what we have on Facebook as well, under the same name. You can see some of the stuff that's going on. It's actually a great source to see if you're in the local area and you're looking for a bonsai show or a workshop. I post a lot of my stuff there. We're getting more and more guest artist travel through, so go check out Underhill on those platforms. And of course, like and subscribe to Little Things. We're on YouTube now. You can go over and listen to the episodes on YouTube. So get our followers up on there as well. And then for you, Carmen, where can they go?
I'm on Instagram at Becoming Bonsai. Also on Facebook. And check out the Purple Pod Society, the National Women's Bonsai Group at purplepodsociety.org.
Matt, do you think you can do your shout out real quick and then we can say goodbye to everyone?
Yeah, for sure. If you're looking for me anywhere, if you find yourself even the slightest bit interested in me at all after any of this, I'm on Instagram at Matt O'Donnell. You can find my podcast, Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know, on Instagram. That is Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know. Find Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know wherever you like to find your podcast.
What is it?
Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know.
Yeah, there you go. You said your name so many times, it's great. And you also have a website, so mattodonald.com.
Yeah, that's
go
right.
Go check out your stuff. Yeah, you know.
My brand is on brand.
Your brand is your name. I mean, super
name
smart.
Name brand.
Oh, God, we need to wrap this up. All right, so thank you guys so much for listening this week. It's been fun recapping these things and just having a little conversation about Trident maples that actually went a different way than I intended this time around. But it's great, though. We should do this. We should do a little bit more on like more tangent kind of stuff like this, because I mean I don't want to have to fire through.
But we didn't
sheets.
Even touch on my April Fool's post, so next time.
Okay, we'll talk about April Fools weeks after. So we'll revisit that later. So, all right. Well, thanks for hanging out, Carmen. Thanks for hanging out, Matt. We will talk to you guys on the next one.
Bye-bye.
See ya.